Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund grant program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Culture Rich Conversations on Juneau Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juneau homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
Welcome to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Joining us this afternoon is Mr. Edward Wesley from the Alaska Black Voters Association and Mr. Cal Williams from the Alaska Black Caucus and former president of the NAACP in Anchorage. Welcome, Mr. Wesley and Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wesley, let's start with you. Can you share a little bit about yourself, anything that you would like us to know? You have quite an extensive biography, both of you do. So I'll just let you share what you would like to share, and then we would love to hear about what the Alaska Black Voters Association is and a bit about your work there.
Yes, let me give you a little bit of history where I was born and grew up at, and that is in the Delta, Mississippi, the heart of the civil rights movement. The town where my father grew up is where Mega Edwards lived until he moved to Jackson, Mississippi, where he was murdered in 1963 for trying to get individuals registered to vote. Also in Mississippi, in 1964, three civil rights workers was murdered in Mississippi. And so voting has been a part of me all my life. The first time that I saw my mother cry was she was watching television and they were reporting about the murder of Mega Edwards. And she was sitting with tears coming down her eyes saying, why did they have to do that to him? So that has been ingrained and planted up on my brains how important voting is, because I saw it make my mother cry. The Black Voters Association is just basically an association of different organizations that came together to have a page to provide information about voting. It has not been as active as we were back in the day. So that's basically a little bit about my history. The town that my parents grew up in was Mount Bayou, Mississippi, that led the civil rights movement. And I'm so happy, and you are so fortunate to have my friend and brother, Mr. Cal Williams, who was a part of CORE, that same organization that those three civil rights workers was working in. And he was there also in 1964.
Thank you, Mr. Wesley. Mr. Williams, welcome.
Thank you so much. Well, I'll begin with that tag that Ed gave me, my involvement with CORE. Thank you, Ed. CORE, Congress of Racial Equality. I grew up in the South, as Ed did, Monroe, Louisiana, and I was kind of an odd duck because across the street from me was a Catholic school that I attended. All of my teachers, the nuns and priests, were white. My grandmother was a nurse, and she was interacting with white people on a constant basis, so I had the misconception that there was basically no discrimination for the longest of time. And I also had the misguided notion that we Black folks were in charge and telling white folks what to do, because my grandmother was always giving orders that white folks had to follow in order to get healthy or get their children healthy. And at this little Catholic school, these nuns insisted that when we talked to them, we looked them in the eye directly and that we speak up. And so again, I was this odd duck until suddenly a group of youngsters with CORE came into my hometown and started talking about public accommodations and the inability to vote. And they got us involved. Going out, we became registrars, going door to door, registering people to vote. My mother had always been a voter. She spent 6 and 7 hours online to vote. So she had ingrained that voting is a big deal. When I was involved with CORE and saw the negative reaction from the white mayor, the white sheriff, and the white citizen council, et cetera, not wanting us to succeed in the work that we were doing, getting these people to register and to vote, I became more and more determined and convinced that this oppression, this keeping us away from the ballot, must have a value to it. Of course, over the years, I've come to see that indeed it does. Voting does matter, and we need to, with the small number that you mentioned earlier, we need to have 100% participation from that number in order to be effective. And I'm glad to be a part of that work.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Can you share a little bit from your perspective about why basically what voter suppression is for those who might be?
Well, it comes in all forms. It comes in changing the laws to make it more difficult to vote, gerrymandering, drawing the lines of redistricting so that you pit one progressive against another, therefore eliminating one. Making available the machinery on which to vote difficult to access, difficult to understand, and in some cases, changing the polling locations at the very last minute. Even to this very day, I contend, of having the mail-in vote set such that a person has to spend 84 cents in order to mail it back. That is oppressive. Fortunately, the post office and they've said that they will deliver that ballot no matter what postage is on it, but that is indeed another form of suppression.
Thank you. What would you say, and this is Mr. Williams or Mr. Wesley, either one of you or both of you can share your thoughts on this, but what would you say to the person who doesn't think that their vote matters at all, and so they wouldn't even go to the polls, or they just don't think that their voice matters?
Ed, you go first on that.
Thank you very much. Let me give a little history about voting. Voting was originally set up in this country only for rich white men. It wasn't until 1828 that people without property, white men without property, was given the right to vote. And then we fought the Civil War and gained the right to vote for African Americans through the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment in 1920, women got the right to vote. 1940s, Asians got the right to vote. 1960, the 24th Amendment eliminated poll taxes. And in 1965, the Voting Rights Act, which is an extension of the 15th Amendment, eliminated the literacy test. And then in 1972, 18-year-olds got the right to vote. All of this came with efforts of fighting. When you vote, voting has the power of life and death. Voting has the power of life and death. And what do I mean by that? If you elect a representative and send them to Congress or a governor, these individuals can send individuals to war. And in war, innocent people are killed. They call that collateral damage. Also, if you're in a particular state, generally jurors are selected from voters registration rolls. You might serve on a jury and have to decide whether someone received the death penalty. So the power of the vote is something that we should never take lightly. It is our key to democracy, as it is stated in the preamble to the Constitution. We fought to ensure our liberty. And what are they talking about when they say liberty? They're talking about our ability to live in a society without authorities opposing oppressive restrictions on our behavior, on our way of life, and on our political views. So I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to talk about that, Mr. Williams.
Well, indeed, I love the fact that you talked about how important it is and the benefits that come from it. And I'll go on the part of the question that said, what do we say to the voter who feels that their vote don't count and it doesn't matter? The district in which I live is divided by some of the richest people in the district and the poorest. That area that is fortunate and wealthy includes the university and the medical area, and they vote in high number. The other portion, the northern end of my district, the poorer side, is low voter turnout. And I've been asked, why don't those people vote? They don't seem to know that voting is important. But when I go out and try and sell that idea to people, they point out to me that in that district, we've always had the progressive to win. And in all those years, I've been here since 1965, the progressive has been in power, but has failed to deliver what that common person feels is the goods of victory. They have seen the victory, but not the rewards. And on a national scale, the night that President Obama was nominated to become the President of the United States, I was so excited in the convention hall that I passed out in Denver. I thought tomorrow our freedom was going to be here, that there would be no more racism, just like my grandfather promised me that one day all that racism was going to be gone. I thought, this is surely that day. More recently, I've been reading Isabel Wilkins' book, Caste. And in it, she explains that the caste system is not so much based on race, but is based on power, maintaining power over those who don't have power. And the poor and those of color are the ones that don't have the power, and the system is rigged to maintain that. So voting is the only leverage we have where we can sneak through and get a person who hopefully will deliver the goods. Sadly, more often than not, we get a person who promise but don't deliver. And sadly, oftentimes, that person is a person of color. So we've got to hold ourselves accountable, the candidates accountable, and we've got to encourage every family member not to be dissuaded, but to exercise that power to vote.
Wow, so well said, and you both made excellent points. I heard Mr. Wesley, I think before we got started, I thought I overheard you say that you were you haven't been as excited about an election other than this one, except for the one where Obama was elected. Was that you who said that?
That was me, because we live in a state that indigenous people have occupied for years. And it's so exciting to me to see a representative of the Alaska Natives to be in Congress. And I haven't been so excited since President Obama because it's been a long time coming. I would also like to add, I keep going back to our history. We must always keep in mind that there are wealthy people that wants to maintain status quo. If you watch those television radio stations, it's not the host that you should focus on. You should focus on the advertisers. Who is paying for the hate that's spewed out over our airways? And that is so, so important. And in Alaska was a part of the 13 states that needed pre-clearance from in the 1964 Voters' Rights Act, 1965 Voters' Rights Act. There were some states, these 13 states, voting activity had been so egregious that they needed pre-clearance, and discrimination against Alaska Natives was one of the reasons there. And just recently, the Supreme Court has been slowly reducing those, eliminating those rights that we have. It started in 2013 with Shelby versus Holman, which was Shelby is in Alabama, Shelby County, Alabama, the largest city in Alabama. Birmingham was the part of that lawsuit. And basically what they said is the formula that was used, we don't have to use that formula anymore, because for 40 years now, we haven't had the discrimination that we used to have. That decision was so repulsive. It's like saying we have speed limits to stop these deaths that was occurring on our highways. But since we haven't had as many in the last 40 years, let's get rid of the speed limits,
right,
and let it fly. So, Mr. Williams.
Well, thanks indeed, and very much so. That is the case. We've had such a division in our country and so much hate and vitriol until, appallingly, here in Anchorage, Alaska, we had a guy go before the Anchorage Assembly and said, these natives ought to go back where they come from. It was Mr. Wesley who first brought my attention to this, and I went and looked at it. It's lost his mind. That can't be true. I looked at it and I thought, it is true. This guy actually said that. Wow. And he was sincere. I mean, you know, that was his true feeling. He lives out in the Wasilla area. There is a history with that they have a school called Colony School. They talked about back in colonial days, the colonies, and these people were granted land to live out in that area. And they then, in fact, went out there and created an area in which they felt superior to others, and especially that cesspool, if you will, called Anchorage, where all these people were mingling and carrying on. They had this place of purity. So we have an awful history with regards to that, and it's somewhat becoming overcome, hopefully and prayerfully. Ironically, the first African-American male to be elected to the Alaska State Senate comes from that area. So there is hope, and let's keep it alive, and let's not give up on the vote.
What are you finding as the central core issues regarding this election to Black voters? Mr. Wesley, I'll let you go first.
I think the representation in the Congress, we're on the precipice of whether or not we will have a democracy or not. So the House of Representatives is very, very important, and so is the U.S. Senate. So we must go out and vote. Sometimes we get hung up on we are not getting what we thought we should get from our representatives. But if we don't have a democracy, it will be a lot worse. It will be just like Russia. You will have a person in charge that tells you what to do. One of the things that I think that many white Americans omit or forget is that when this country was, when I should say, when the Europeans started in this country back in 1676, blacks and natives got together and threw the governor out of one of the settlements there. But in 1681, they came back, and this is where the racism came from. They empowered the poor person. But the poor white forgets that they were indentured servants. Many of them was indentured servants, and African Americans were slaves. And so they gave them the public dominion over people that were non-white. And so as a result, that's all they get. Because if the wealthy whites wanted to liberate and change the condition of the poor whites, there are many billionaires that could throw a few billion dollars their way if that was the case. That's not what it's about. It's about that love of money, which is the root of all evil.
And budgetary decisions, how monies and resources are allocated, are decided by someone who won an election on the school board or on the assembly, etc. And there's been a move, a national move, to get involved in national elections, state elections, and elections all the way down to dog catcher. We have, right here in River City, plans to take over assemblies and councils and school boards. We've had people on our school board who have their children in private school, but they're serving on the school board, sitting there determining resources for the kids going into public school. That's atrocious. These people are bound and determined to cripple public school, constantly pointing out the failings of public school, constantly cutting funds. We're here in Anchorage talking about closing 5 elementary schools. And they say that even that won't fix the fiscal gap of the shortfall that we now have. How in the world can it be in a state that we are so wealthy that we can give $3,000 to a citizen but not have enough money to educate our youth? There is something strictly wrong with that. And I contend that it all goes back to this notion of kill public education. And again, I support public education, though I went to a private school the 12 years that I was at Little Flower Academy, this Catholic school. And my parents paid for my tuition, going to college and stuff. I know that there are many others, many in my family, who were not accorded that opportunity. So I advocate for public schools. I advocate for scholarships and for people, all people, to get as much education as they possibly can and never, never, ever stop learning.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. If you're just joining us, this is Culture Rich Conversations, and I'm Christina Michelle. I'm discussing the quickly approaching Alaska midterm elections with Edward Wesley and Cal Williams. I want to take a moment and discuss frustrations Alaska's Black voters may be feeling. Before I do that, Mr. Wesley, was there something that you wanted to say in response to Mr. Williams?
African Americans are targeted, as they always have been across this country. The lawsuit that was brought by President Trump targeted African-American cities with a lie, saying that we stole the election in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta. What is so sad about that is that our own governor, John Levy, signed off on that frivolous lawsuit. And in spite of all of that, we will prevail. We are birthing a new nation. And when you birth a new nation, you have to push. We must push forward to move from this multicultural society to a multicultural democracy. They have blocked us from getting unfettered access to the vote so that we can have a multicultural democracy. We will get there. It will take some sacrifice. We will push forward and make that happen.
Thank you, Mr. Wesley. Mr. Williams, do you get the sense that Black voters are maybe a little bit discouraged about voting because of not seeing some follow through from candidates that they've helped get elected in the past?
Indeed, and that I did address a bit prior, that like in my district, we have been represented by a progressive, and I'll say it, the Democrat, ever since I arrived in 1965, and it's still the poorest district around. So, you know, you just can't dupe a person forever saying, keep reaching in the jar. There is a cookie in there somewhere. The fruits of victory must be felt. And most people, unlike Cal Williams, seek self-interest. I was trained to volunteer. I was trained that as you do service and volunteer work and don't worry about the money or the glory, etc. Well, that was kind of like a beatdown in a sense, because we know that people are motivated more about their self-interest. What's in it for me? How can I gain economically, physically, socially, or politically from this action? I told some kids one time about volunteering. One of them said, oh yeah, I love to volunteer. How much do they pay? So we've got to indeed, you know, regenerate the notion of service. We don't have a draft. We don't have the military. A lot of kids don't participate in sports and stuff where they learn sharing and giving. So that's a part of it. But indeed, the constant push to vote. I'm often reminded of my mentor, a man named John Parks in this city. Well, he's gone now. But he used to sit in front of the grocery store with a little table registering voters. And he'd, hey, boy, you registered? Yes, sir, Mr. Park. I don't believe it. Show me your card. And if you couldn't produce your voting card, he'd make you sign up and register again. So I love Mr. Parks, and that's the kind of spirit we've got to maintain.
Well, thank you. And that brings me to my next question. What are some things that we can do to help engage our younger Black voters? Because, like, for example, I have a nephew and he's 15, and in a few years he's going to be among the age range that who can vote. But as I know it now, he's not too interested. So what can we do to help encourage our younger voters to get out there and to cast their vote?
Go ahead, Cal. I'm sorry.
Let me just leap this one first, because starting at the very root, in this town, I can remember Chancey Croft and Tony Croft bringing their son, when he was small, to the conventions, and he was running around passing out papers. I can remember Peggy Begich bringing her son, Mark Begich, at an early age to the conventions and stuff. We have second and third generation youth who are now serving because, again, I can remember when their parents brought them to these meetings as small children. So don't pawn your children off to babysitters and worry, oh, I don't have childcare. Bring them to the meetings, because if they get in there at a young age, it will stick with them.
Oh, I love that. Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Wesley?
Voting has to be incentivized, and we can do that with our young people through our organizations, through our churches. Our churches years ago aided in our liberation, and there's not enough information being shared about the civic responsibility. In your schools, the two most important things that you should be learning about in schools, you don't, and that is about your finances and your civics. You don't have enough of that, and that's intentional. And so in our churches, it is very, very important that they set up opportunities for young people to participate and have awards and things that you can provide for them that would encourage them to participate, to be educated. And it's incumbent upon all of us to educate the rest of you. And so I applaud you for this show, for giving the opportunity for so many listeners to hear things that they probably wouldn't normally hear.
Thank you, Mr. Wesley. I want to talk a little bit about gender and the role that genders play in voting. In recent election years, we've heard a lot about the Black women and how important their votes are. And I'm wondering if you both can explain why the Black female vote is so important.
I will start with that, Cal.
Thank you.
We have to be careful. Let me say this. In a nation of leaders that are righteous, the people rejoice. In a nation of evil leaders, there's strife, misunderstanding, and there people could put against each other. African-American males vote in the 90 percentile or high 80s. And African-American women vote as they block in the high 90s. But yet you hear the African-American male is not voting, and why their votes are not up to where the women's are. Well, let's talk about the rest of them that are in those parties. Why aren't you voting? Because we are not going to allow that division among our people, because both are delivering, and they are trolls. There's Russian trolls all on Facebook to keep African Americans from voting. And also for African-American women. We need to know about that and know those things when we see those things on Facebook. And I give you an example. You might see a candidate running, and I'm beginning to hear that about our vice president now. She locked up Black men. She locked up a lot of Black men in California for marijuana, which is not true. But that would be out there to divide us. And we must understand the power of our votes. And one of the things that, well, not one, the rewards, a couple of the rewards of our vote this last time around, an associate Supreme Court justice, a national holiday, Juneteenth. We must continue to get out and vote in high numbers. Our percentages will be higher than most, and that will take place even here in Anchorage. And I think that our churches will step forward and aid in that the way they used to do. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll speak in what will seem to be generalities, and the inheritors are supposed to do that, but let me do so. My grandmother was the one who pushed my grandfather to vote. My mother was the one who pushed my father to vote. And it was a lady named Sarah McCoy who had been kicked out of Southern University for demonstrating and picketing in a demonstration down in Baton Rouge. She had been kicked out of the university, came back into my hometown, and was a hero, a heroine, hero. Everybody, oh, wow, she got kicked out, man. She's something. Sarah McCoy, man, she bad, man. Sarah McCoy. So the next thing I knew, there was Sarah McCoy organizing and working with this core thing. And all of a sudden, here come these people from New York. But it was Sarah McCoy who first started raising that ruckus. And it was always Sarah who we'd be in a car. And they should see a sign, white on it, stop the car, we're going in. So Sarah McCoy was the pusher. And I came to find that they would do organizing. They would keep lists and they would have all this stuff going that we guys, a lot of us were in there just because the girls were good looking. So these young ladies who kind of kept the glue of things going, we'd lose receipts and all that other kind of stuff, and they would have that organizational skill, passion, and very importantly, since the family is kind of matriarchal in our society, and it's the woman who had to ferret out and figure out how to feed a family of 12 on $30 and stuff, so always women were keenly aware of the cost of living and the connection between cost of living and who's in office and these kind of things. So I'll speak in that generality. It seems to be holding up true to this very day that in most of our organizations, even the ones where the leader may be the president, the workers are the women.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. I'm wondering, for those who are just getting more into voting, Mr. Wesley, you mentioned that there are trolls and things like that on Facebook, and there's a lot of false information out there and lies that are being told. How do we, find the truth, or what are some of the best ways we can go about making sure that we're well informed with what's true so that we can make decisions that we can feel good about?
President Obama used to say, if you're looking for someone, you ought to first look at yourself. It could be starting. And I think that you guys exemplify what you're asking by having shows that educate the public, by putting up information on pages like the Black Voters Association to let them know that this is existing and these are the type of lies that you might encounter on Facebook. And so I think it's so important that we educate. Remember, being conscious, we call that wokeness. the people who suppress the vote is totally against wokeness and consciousness. They do not want that. That's why they banning books. They don't want you to be educated. So it's about educating our people.
Indeed. And in the media, we had at one point the Fairness Act, where media, public media and stuff, had to do equal share and stuff. And if you present one side, you had to present the other. And suddenly FCC removed that restriction, and conservatives moved in and bought up all these radio stations. And the talk radio station is just proliferated with the conservative idea. And where do we get our information? Good things, stations such as yourself and public media, PRN, we can get, you know, something, and we reach out to the BBC. We got to get reach out hard to get our image get our message. That is truly unfortunate. We need to do more. I want to say black owned, I will say that, but stations and media owned by people in the progressive or woke community, we need to have that in order to do part of that education. But in the meantime, we will not remain stagnant. Fortunately, our youth have come up with all this texting and TikTok and stuff where they're getting the message out. So a marriage between the younger and the older on getting the message out, we will indeed prevail.
Thank you so much. In closing, as you know, our show is about the Black lived experience. And as an Alaskan voter, I'm wondering if there's anything else that either of you would like to share about the Black lived experience or about anything else.
I'd like to say.
I would like to speak. Oh, go ahead, Cal.
Well, I'd like
to speak.
Go ahead, Ed.
Mr. Wesley, you can go first.
Yes. We mentioned voter suppression earlier, and it comes in many forms. With the Alaska Natives, the language, it could be language barriers. Are we printing ballots in those languages? Are we ensuring that there are poll workers that can interpret those languages, even if we can't print those ballots? Are the times that we have for voting suitable to the people you're trying to reach? Are the polling places in the close proximity to where the individuals that don't have the car that needs to walk, that walks to the poll? So those are the type of things that keep me working on voters' education.
And I'd like to say that though we're small in number, we can indeed be impactful. Back in May, the Democratic Party had its state convention in Seward. There was only four Black males at the state convention. However, we were able to get two resolutions passed. Mr. Wesley got one through on student loan forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I got one through that all law enforcement should have body cams throughout the state. So there we were, just four people at this huge convention able to do that. So that I invite people in the BIPOC community and the African communities, surely, to participate in precinct organizing, district organizing, take over the party, become a part of it, because sadly, the Democratic Party here in the state of Alaska has no people of color working for it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Williams. And it's interesting to have this kind of come full circle, because we just were talking about the body cams in our roundtable discussion, I think last week. And so to know that you were there and you were part of that decision, that's really beautiful. That's amazing work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it has truly been an honor to speak with both of you today. The work that you've done and continue to do in Alaska's Black community is so important and so necessary. We are sincerely grateful. I learned so much today, and I know that our listeners did too. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us this afternoon. This is Culture Rich Conversations, and I'm Christina Michelle.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na khaya ha an ka gun cheese.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Today in Black History, we recognize the oldest Black-owned insurance company in America, the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company, which was founded on October 20th in 1898 by John Merrick in Durham, North Carolina. Again, I would like to thank our special guests, Edward Wesley and Cal Williams, for joining us today. It is vital that we Alaskans make our way to the polls in this midterm election and let our voices be heard. I want to encourage everyone to go to elections.alaska.gov and make sure that you have a plan to cast your ballot the way that you want to and when you want to. We all have the opportunity to be informed voters, and there's no better time to start than now. We appreciate our listeners for being here with us, and we look forward to hearing any feedback you may have for us. If you want to reach us, our email address is junobaa@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook by just searching JunoBAA. And if you would like to mail us something, our mailing address is P.O. Box 33734, Juneau, Alaska 99803. Today's producer was Natasha Boozer. We'll meet again next week, and in the meantime, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle, and this has been Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.